If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by Scam School Book 1. Available right now. Folks, it's the compilation of over 80 tricks from the popular web series Scam School, starring Weird Things host Brian Brushwood. The material is from over 200 episodes. There's audio commentary on every trick, over 35 video demonstrations, and it's laid out beautifully. It's absolutely the future of instructional ebooks. You need to see it to believe it. Get all the information at scamschoolbook.com. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave after having been declared dead a year earlier. On Fort Lauderdale Beach, a missing World War II airman and his aircraft show up as if he only died hours before. They call the mysterious man behind these unnatural events the Warlock. To some, he's a messenger of a modern age of miracles. But to Jessica Blackwood, FBI agent and daughter of a legendary magic family, the Warlock is a trickster and a murderer. And she's the only one who can see through his deceptions. Angel Killer is available now on Amazon for only 99 cents. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com. Hi, friends. It's me, Justin. What you're about to hear is an episode out of time. Specifically, May 21st, me and Andrew were on our way to the SpaceX launch in Cape Canaveral, Florida. Just to give you a geographical sense of how that works, we live in the Fort Lauderdale area, which is 3 hours south. The episode takes place while we're driving, so there's a few tech hiccups, and it's pretty chaotic. But we wanted to present it to you as a whole, so you could kind of get a sense of the live wire excitement that we were feeling as we traveled. Longtime listeners of the show will know how much we talk about SpaceX, and this is kind of like a love letter to them. Make sure you listen to the end of the podcast so you can hear our reaction to how the launch went. I also wanted to read the sponsored spots up front as opposed to in the middle of the episode so everybody could experience that live energy and an unbroken whole. So here we go. This episode is brought to you by Matthew Botkin. He just wanted to let everybody know that you can head on over to his blog, wandererspathbooks.wordpress.com, and read the first 5 chapters of his upcoming 6-part science fiction fantasy book series, Wanderer's Path. Also by Brian Perkins, who just wanted to say, hey, copyright sucks. It really does. It's awful. Stop copywriting, because it's ruining things. And by Jim Kotu. He likes to make funny videos. You can find them at youtube.com/destinationjim. You can also follow him on Twitter at @destination_jim. Remember, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast for only $30, I'll read whatever you write. Just go to weirdthings.com/sponsor. And now, here is the completely uninterrupted live SpaceX Dragon capsule launch episode. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a very special edition of Weird Things. As you've known, horrible video quality and audio quality. Justin and I are recording this live from the road as we head up for our second attempt to go see SpaceX launch the Falcon 9 with the Dragon capsule. Joining us from our own mission control is Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea how excited I am that I get to be a part of it this time. I was so bummed that I couldn't be there, and I have to debrief you guys on what the experience was like to go there, have the countdown fully end, and then not have the thing go off. Walk me through that.
I'll start off, and I'll let Justin finish once we finish doing this wild curve here to Texas on to 95. You know, we went up there. We weren't sure where we were going to go, and we had an idea that it wasn't going to be like the NASA launch where, you know, you can't even find a place to park, you know, east of Tampa. But we got up there. We met our buddy Ken and a friend of his, and we drove on over to Canaveral. And, you know, first place we went to was we went right to the Kennedy Space Center, like, oh, maybe we could go there and they'll let us hang out in the parking lot. No dice. They're like, what are you doing here? Like, well, we want to see the launch. Like, can't see it from here. Get away. Run. So we left. He actually was pretty polite.
Hold on real quick. So like, you guys, this isn't a case where there was a newspaper article that said the best place to look is you know, because shuttles, it was always like, here's the best place to watch, that kind of thing. Is this sort of, did you feel like they were downplaying it because it wasn't a NASA launch?
No.
Well, wait, back up. If you went to the NASA website and you talk about viewing, they kick you over to the Kennedy Space Center site and they say, oh yeah, great place to go view. What they mean is not from there though.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, I was thinking maybe you could hang out in the parking lot and watch, but that wasn't the case. But anyhow, there are places you can go find it. You know, they weren't like, hey, here's where to go watch it from. There wasn't any like they have in other launches where they say go here or here to go. You know, you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so we went and we found this spot, an awesome spot, which was right on the water. You overlooked, and there's like two barrier sort of islands or peninsulas, and across one and then the other one is where the launch pad is.
Right.
And we got out the binoculars, and I think it was Ken Ken spotted it. I'm looking at this, I'm the biggest, shiniest thing there. I'm like, that's it. That wasn't it. Ken spotted it between the grass, and there's the little tiny silver there.
Well, and when we got to our spot, it was like us and another car that may or may not have been a necking couple or drug transaction. Like, it was pretty barren. And then, you know, and we're kind of like, well, I mean, do we go somewhere else? Because it's, and also couch all of this in that it's 4 a.m. We've all been up for like 45 minutes after, you know, taking maybe an hour and a half worth of sleep. Everything's sort of touch and go no matter what, but you're doing your best. Like, I'm trying to find, there's a few people up on Twitter that are saying that they're down there looking, you know, they from Twitter, it seems as if there's some sort of like community of people watching this, that there's like, you know, a really fun party at 3:30 in the morning with like food trucks and, you know, everyone's high-fiving and we just can't find it.
And it's even worse because you can hear the party happening, but you can't track it down. It's like you don't even know. It's not even that you're not invited. It's like you don't even know where it is.
Well, it's like the worst of all scenarios because, like, I don't even know if there was a party. I know there were, like, two people on Twitter saying that they were having a good time together. Like, you know, I had no idea if there's even anything to look at. And no one was where we were initially. And then as it got closer to launch, it really just became a naked party. It was like everybody was going crazy. The entire place filled up, and we kind of realized as soon as Ken spotted where the Falcon 9 was going to launch from that we really had, you know, probably close to the best seat that we could possibly get for it.
Yeah, it was great. People started filling in, and then we took, I found the feed, you know, the SpaceX feed, put it on my iPhone, we plugged it into the Ken speaker, and we started blasting that out so everybody could hear. A lot of people didn't realize there was a mission control up there, so everybody could hear the countdown and the talk. And it was fun. You know, it was really fun. It was just this, it was kind of like the best example I can think of was, remember in Close Encounters how everybody goes up to that hillside?
Yeah. To Devil's Peak, right? And there's this electricity in the air, and nobody knows what's going to happen, but they know it's special.
Yeah, like the first time, like not when they went there, but like the first time when they went up to the highway. You know, and the bend in the highway, and then it come, and it was that kind of thing. It's like, We were all called there. We were all called there because we knew something special was about to happen.
Right, right. Well, and so now in this case, what happened was I was not familiar with the fact that computers could make the distinction of whether or not it was a go or no go. And this is a case where the launch was abandoned, not by a human. The countdown got all the way to zero. He said the word liftoff and then was like, psych, at the end, right? How did that go down?
Even better, Bri. We're there, we're waiting, we're the countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We could hear the engine start.
And oh my gosh.
And then you're waiting, you're looking out there, waiting to see that just column of fire as it rises into the sky. And we hear this, and then nothing.
Yeah.
We're like...
And I didn't know how much of that was the live stream, how much of that was what was echoing across the bay, and how much of it was my dreams. Like, but you definitely, there was a bit of a roar, and then, you know, it was almost like for a split second, my first thought was that we had actually picked a horrible viewing location.
Oh no!
And, like, behind us, like, history was happening, and we were the boobs.
Yeah, it's going up behind us, you know.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you hear, like you said, like, you know, psych protocol had been enabled by you know, the Max Trollbot system, and now we weren't going to see the launch. And at that point, you really got a sense of who the real space aficionados were, because they were people that immediately packed it in and started leaving, and I guess those are the people that knew that this was that they had a 1 second launch window.
They knew it's not like when a club declares they're at capacity, where it's like if you kind of hang out until after the fire marshal leaves, maybe you'll be able to slip a 20 and get in. Like, these guys know that when they say launch postponed, they're all like, well, let's go beat the traffic. It's like when you know your team's already lost.
That it wasn't going to be, I was kind of a noob when it comes to launches and stuff like that. I've never seen, despite growing up in Florida, I've never seen a launch of any kind. So I just kind of assumed that it'd be one of those things where it's like, oh, wait, hold on. Like, we forgot to buckle a buckle. So,
your only botched launch attempts come from The Empire Strikes Back, where it's just a matter of kicking the right servo motor and then the thing takes off.
Yeah, and like, we didn't realize that there was such a tight window there.
It is a 1 second launch window because they have to intercept the International Space Station.
Holy cow, are you kidding me?
Not 1 second. 1 second. So if they go past it, they're like, oops.
Now, are those the margins that NASA was operating with the shuttle, or is the shuttle just a different animal to where it's taken so much fuel they had more play? Because is this something that's only possible because of the precision of computer-controlled launch times?
I don't know. I don't know if with the shuttle, if it's that matter of the fact where it had...
Oh, there we go. Now we dropped them on one feed. Let me go ahead and turn them up on the other. This is good. This is why we have redundant feeds. Gentlemen, are you there? We are seeing the top of the car. Oh, there we go. We're dropped off. For those of you guys, this is the point where I want to remind you guys that you are watching Weird Things Live. This is one of our rare, truly live episodes as we follow Justin Robert Young and Andrew Main as they head on the 3-hour journey to go catch the SpaceX live launch tonight. We were just hearing about the failed attempt before. And one of the things I want to ask you now that we have you back, guys, is it had to have been so strange to be there in the electricity, especially given that you guys had invested 3 hours of your time just to get out there, and then this thing shuts down. Sorry, that's my end. Go ahead.
You know, for us, to be honest with you, we were okay with it. I mean, it was more we kind of felt bad for SpaceX, you know, that, you know, it's a kind of a big deal. But we were excited. It was fun. It was an electric atmosphere. I mean, like, it's I can't. I mean, Justin.
Well, I mean, for me, number one, I there was literally no sense of disappointment for me personally at all, or even really for SpaceX. I mean, I was kind of disheartened to sort of see some of the reaction press-wise the next day to categorize it as, you know, like a failure or a, you know, an element of amateurism in my, you know, following as a spectator of rocket science, you know, delays and sign of caution seems to be the rule as opposed to the exception or the sign that, you know, something has gone wrong. So it's like, I'm out there because I love the idea that we could be going to space more often.
Right.
And I understand the reason, part of what made me drive, you know, and made me want, and is driving me now to go see it again is not because I want to see a firework. It's not because I want to see a spectacle. It's because I want this to succeed and I want to be there at a point in history when we said, you know, that we're not going to be tourists in space. We want to move in.
Right.
And if that's why I'm there, then the only thing that matters to me is it goes well and it goes right. And if there was a computer subroutine that said that, you know, engine number 5 was a little too hot, then that's what the engine, that's what it did.
Yep. All right. So there you go. We dropped them again. I'll give them a call on the other line. Meanwhile, I think I am going to go ahead and pull up the feed. There's a couple of stories that I could share with you guys while we're waiting until they call back. Not the least of which is on the news, a lot of people, and I don't know why this wasn't discussed earlier, but the ashes of James Doohan, Scotty from Star Trek, are going up on this SpaceX flight. And I wonder why I've only seen this as a news item after we had the first failed launch attempt. I don't know what the story is with that. Let me ask, in fact, now that we're getting Andrew Main back on, let me see if I can get him on. And in fact, maybe I'll see if I can get him just audio only. Andrew, are you there, guys?
Yeah, we're on the other phone.
Okay. All right, good. Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to, we could step down to audio only on that phone to save bandwidth. But one of the things I was just talking to the folks on the live stream about was it just me, or did I not see any stories about James Doohan's ashes being on the SpaceX flight until after the first launch window failed? Because now I'm seeing those all over the place today.
I hadn't seen anything about that prior, and I don't know whether or not it was like an embargoed thing or that company that I guess rents the rocket space for
right
to go into orbit, like, doesn't want to release that information until a certain time, which would make sense because obviously, you know, part of that story was that they had initially rented space on a rocket that did not get to orbit.
Right. Well, and so do you think it's a case where it's just, this is just an anomaly of news cycles and it's not necessarily or do you think it's a timing thing of when the press release happened to go out?
Let me turn this over. It would make sense if it was a timing thing with the press.
All right. Well, so tell me this. If you guys go, and this time the stakes are a little bit higher because you're not just getting up early in the morning to drive out there, you guys are going to pull an all-nighter just to experience this, to be part of history. If this has another abort seconds before takeoff or even an hour before takeoff, and you turn around, you come back home, how many times do you keep driving out to see this little bit of history happen? At what point, let me paint a scenario for you guys, all right? So imagine you go through this first time.
Podcast.
You go through tonight, and then the thing craps out. You come home, tail between your legs, and they say, okay, next launch is next Wednesday. Do you go next Wednesday?
Well, I mean, number one, and not to object to the premise, not to put the system on trial, Brian, but you know, really, like, there really is, like, there's no tail between your legs. At least for me personally, I can't speak for Andrew, but, like, I really, there's, like, yeah, I'll keep coming up as long as I have the time and the means. I mean, you know, I'm down here in South Florida until Wednesday. As long as it's possible and I'm still able to get the other stuff done, I want to make the time to come see it because it really is. I mean, Andrew, you were talking to a mutual friend of ours about, you know, a parallel in history when it comes to something like this, right?
Yeah, and it's weird. We're not able to get Skype video on.
That's all right. As long as I got the audio, I'm a happy man.
We're not. It's interesting that we're trying on either one of these here. You know, I explaining this to a friend of mine, and, you know, the example I used was if you had the chance, I said, listen, if I had a time machine and I could take you back in time to go see the Wright brothers, you know, when they went and launched, you know, their first airplane or one of their first things, would you want to go? Would you hop in there to go see? Forget the novelty of the time machine.
Right.
And...
Yep, no, and I could totally pick up on what you're saying there, as they're going to, of course, call back right away. But I totally get the point. I mean, it's like if you can be there in history in small part, and of course, the number one complaint you're going to hear from a lot of people are people saying, oh, this is just another launch. There's nothing new here. The only thing that's new is that it's a company besides a government. And the question is, does that change anything? And if for longtime listeners of the Weird Things podcast, you know that for the three of us, we believe it does. For if for no other reason than because we are experiencing a race to profitability for space travel. And I'm going to check with Andrew on this when he gets back on to see if I'm getting my numbers right. But on the space shuttle, you were looking at $10,000 to $20,000 per pound of payload per launch. And nowadays with SpaceX, I believe that right now they're at $2,000 per pound per launch. And I may be wrong. I'm not the smart one. Andrew is the brains of this operation. Here, let me get him on. Hey, Andrew. So I was just talking to these guys, talking about why the significance of this particular launch. And correct me if I'm wrong. You were saying that SpaceX got the payload cost down to, is it under $2,000 per pound? Like
that's right. Right now, I think they're under $2,000 per pound.
That's amazing. Down from, and on the space shuttle, we were looking at $10,000 to $20,000 per pound. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's really hard to calculate what the real cost of it, as you know, with the space shuttle, what it really was. And, you know, now you're looking at SpaceX, you know, they're very ambitious in what they're trying to do. I was trying to tweak, you know, what they're trying to do as far as cost-wise, whatever, getting things down. You know, Elon Musk is, you know, the next step, the next level evolution, if they get this to the space station and they can start running some cargo runs and they have a successful platform to do that and they feel it's stable and it's predictable and it's safe, the same capsule we're watching hopefully tonight go up is capable of carrying crew. Now, the thing is, before SpaceX uses that to take astronauts up there, they want to have an escape viable system in case something goes wrong to save those astronauts. And what SpaceX wants to do is to have a rocket that will take it off, that will just separate it from the rocket, and then actually be able to land by rocket power. But that same rocket that would allow it to land rocket power in an escape situation could also let it land from orbit via rocket power.
Right. Well, and that's the we've discussed, this is a really interesting episode because I know we have a lot of new listeners to the Weird Things podcast, and a lot of them don't know how long we've been kicking around SpaceX as I don't know if it's a blank canvas onto which we project all our hopes and dreams for profitable space travel. I don't know if we're just excited about a new punk rock kid coming in and stirring up the space race, but there's something about the SpaceX story that we love. And out of everything, the idea of a 100% reusable, it would be three stages, right? 100% reusable, three-stage rocket, where all of a sudden, there's no reason you can't just run this thing once a week, on the clock, nonstop. All your only cost is refueling and keeping the people there to make sure the computers are running.
Yeah, it's a crazy, ambitious idea. And, you know, it's I think a lot of us are out there going, we're rooting SpaceX and Elon Musk on. You know, we know it's hard. It is very, very, very hard what they're trying to do. And, you know, that it doesn't work right the first time or the second time. And maybe they don't get this launched until later this summer. Or maybe, you know, it takes longer than that. That somebody is out there trying to do this.
Right.
That's important.
Well, and we should...
It's worth our support. You know, it's worth, for me at least, you know, it's worth going out there and saying, dude, this is awesome, you know, and people should be excited about it. It's something that, to me, it bothers me when I read the cynical stuff about it, because to me, it's just so pure, you know, it's,
right.
It's let's go to space, man, that's awesome.
Right. Well, and so, man, there's so much I want to talk about. One of the things I want to touch on when we have a moment is to talk about the other players in the privatized space race, you know, with the Armadillo Aerospace.
But before we go any further, just to add something on to the $2,000 a pound and falling number, I mean, dig on this. Prior to this, what you were looking at in a, you know, if you wanted to get some stuff to space, and Andrew knows this probably more than me, but as I have been made to understand it, it's kind of like if you have to ask the price, it's too expensive for you.
Right, sure. It used to be all the space astronauts would sit there with their space top hats on and their space monocles laughing at the little folk. But now, I mean, if it hits, one of the things I'm seeing in the chat room is that the target is to hit $1,000 with the, I believe, the Dragon capsule. If that happens, then all of a sudden, a good chunk of retirees could choose to blow their nest egg on a trip up into space, which is phenomenal that it happened in my lifetime. I remember reading an article in Wired magazine, I think it was about a space elevator or something, talking about how expensive it is to get stuff to space, and it said, you know, once you get down under $1,000, once you get around $100 a pound, all of a sudden it becomes your own money to spend.
That's what the reusable would look like if they, you know, and I asked the media contact a couple months ago at SpaceX. I said, listen, you know, are you planning on even making the Falcon Heavy and the Super Heavy and all of that reusable? And the response was yes. And you're talking about an under $100 per pound launch cost.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing. And think about not only the ability. We should point out a few things. Like, they're very future minded. This, even though all they're doing is shipping up cargo, this capsule has a window in it, right? So the cargo has a fabulous view as it goes into space. I mean,
and you know, just so people know what this means, you can build a business on this. I mean, like, now you just even at $2,000 a pound, you can say, okay, I can put this into an Excel spreadsheet and say, what do I send to space that I could make money on, you know?
What unmet demand? All of a sudden it becomes profitable for a few schmoes to throw up internet access satellites out of their own, you know, for under $10 million, the entire project.
Yeah, and like, this is, it's just a really interesting way to see. I mean, now we're looking at this kind of stuff in the same way that we would look at,
That's a sign of the police. That's a sign of the police.
You know, it's one of those. I think I was going over the speed limit. I was going.
So far, looks good. I never take this lane.
This will be great. Actually, we get pulled over. We'll set up a scenario. It turns out it's Officer Fudge.
I'll tell you what, if we get pulled over, Brian, you just keep doing a show.
Okay. And then you can be like, oh, officer, what's this? And it's like history in the making, live right now. Andrew and Justin being pulled over by a cop on their way to SpaceX's launch.
That would not be history in the making.
No, that would be a horrible idea. But yeah, I mean, just like, now you can look at this closer to the way that we look at just shipping cargo in airplanes. You know, like, now it's closer. It's one step closer to that than to a patronage system, or a system where only, you know, businesses where no object can play in this playground. And that just, you know, it opens up a myriad ideas and concepts and possibilities, and just makes our future so much richer.
So answer me this, Andrew. Is this going to be the first attempt? Well, okay, in this case, you could just drop off on the live stream, in which case I'm going to kick it over to the chat room. For those of you guys who don't know, we record Weird Things live every Monday night, usually at 10 or 11 p.m. Eastern time. Usually we do not consult the chat room because it's mainly about the three of us wrapping our minds around news of the weird, UFOs, Bigfoots, and that kind of thing. And so we try to keep it just about us. But since we have the chat room here and you guys are just as likely to know as I am, what did SpaceX do before this? Like, how big of a launch, a jump is this? Because I know they've done some kind of test flights before. Have they successfully rendezvoused one of their capsules with the International Space Station before now? Or is this sort of just a big jump forward. And while you guys ruminate on that, I'm going to get Andrew back on the line and repeat the question. Hey, Andrew, I was just asking the chat room, is this has until this flight, has SpaceX rendezvoused a capsule with the International Space Station before? Or is this just the first like, oh, yeah, we're pretty sure we can do it?
Never, never. All SpaceX has had one orbital mission. And what if I can get your video feed here?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm not sending it. Let me fix that for you there. Sorry about that.
One orbital mission. And that all it was, I mean, all it was the first private company to ever launch a craft into orbit. They put it into orbit. They've never come close. They've never tried to do anything NASA-related. That was a totally private mission. This is the first mission in cooperation with NASA. And the goal is, they're going to try several things here, and each one of them would be a success. First one is just to get this capsule into orbit. The second one is to put it into an orbit parallel with the space station. That's the second thing. That's a big thing they're going to try to do.
Wow.
Third thing they're going to try to do is they're going to try to bring it close to the International Space Station, okay? and then if they're confident they bring it, if they get it into orbit, they bring it in the parallel orbit, and then they get it close, then they're going to try docking.
Wow. Okay. So I guess I didn't realize how big of a leap this is. The fact that none of this had been done before, that the closest they've done is, did I hear right, just one orbital mission? They've only made it around the Earth once?
Yeah, they sent the Falcon, the Dragon, I think it went around once or twice.
Wow. This is a major step forward, and I guess the fact is...
Yeah.
Wait, I wasn't able to hear that. Say it again, fellas.
And then it came back, which is a very important part of the mission.
Yes, yes. So I guess this is one of those contingency kind of approval things where it's like, hey, can we resupply your space station? And they're like, yeah, sure, if you can make it into space and if you can go into orbit and if that orbit is parallel and if you can maneuver close. And, I mean, it's just this is – It's almost riddled with doubt. I don't even know how to describe the weird vibe I have on it.
Well, and this is a great way to segue into some of the challenge, or not the challenge, but right now what is going on with NASA and the money that they have given to some of the private companies to fill in for missions like this. That SpaceX is the one, they're the first horse out of the gate. They've gotten a ton of attention and have been the company that's been the most visible in putting stuff into space, but they're only one of four companies that are right now getting NASA
Oh, there we go. Dropped him again, but obviously he was talking about how SpaceX is first out of the gate, and that's one of the questions I really wanted to bring up. You have a bunch of other players in the privatized space race. I want to ask him about Armadillo Aerospace, which was created by John Carmack, who built his fortune on Doom and Quake over at id Software. You also have stuff that's being done with Jeff Bezos. I never know how to say his name. But I know that he's working on craft. Of course, Jeff Bezos has decided that he wants to go rescue the Apollo engines from the bottom of the sea, which is pretty rad. But let's kick it over to the chat room right here. We'll take you guys. Of course, yeah, Virgin Galactic is working on suborbital flights, so you guys could go up for space tourism. They're going to talk about building their first ever space hotels. People are saying it's Bezos, so I'll call Bezos. But people are asking where they can watch the launch other than TV. Somebody sent me over a link to NASA.gov/multimedia/NASA TV, and I'm looking at that right now, and it looks like they're showing reruns of other stuff. I'm sure they'll switch over to a live feed when they actually have the takeoff. How were you watching the feeds, Andrew, when you guys were looking at it last time? What experience did you have? Because you were on mobile platform.
We used whatever the website was. It worked on the iPhone.
Oh wow, that's fantastic!
Yeah,
dude, you gotta love living in the future where all
and,
of that.
And I'll explain one of the technical challenges we have right now. You know, they have the MiFi, which has a pretty good signal, but when we keep switching towers, that's most likely, you know, where we're getting the little freezes and hiccups.
Yeah, listen, Brian.
That was pretty good timing right there. Listen, Bri, hit a tower, and then that's where we're at. So, yeah, people are asking over here in the chat room. Yeah, it almost certainly will be on NASA TV. I'm sure, like, I'm sure all of that on there. People are saying that the coverage starts at 2:30 a.m. I assume that's Eastern, so that's not too far off. I am loving the fact that people are responding on Twitter, letting people know to watch live as you watch our crew head on out over there, which is, this is such an awesome test. It's like, if you want one quintessential moment of me living in the future, if I could go back in time to being in 10th grade and just give a snapshot of this moment of here I am in our own bizarre version of Mission Control. I'm live connected wirelessly to a device that was inconceivable back in 1990, watching two of my friends go on an adventure to see a landmark event. I was just telling Andrew how much I would love to just flash this exact moment of my life and what is happening right now, and the technology that I'm using to connect to you guys as you go experience this event. It's unreal, man, and it's just going to get more and more interesting.
I can imagine like a Skype call over this connection to like the past. Invest in Google, don't invest in Facebook. What? Invest in Facebook, not Google. What?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things we were talking about while you guys were between towers are the other competitors in the private space race. We talked about Armadillo Aerospace by John Carmack, Jeff Bezos's venture, which I forget the name of his company. What was it? What's that?
Blue Origin. And there's Sierra Nevada. And then there's the, you know, the usual suspects like the Lockheed, Boeing, you know, their project, which... they're kind of upset that they have to compete. You know, they have their own United Launch, whatever, alliance,
right,
which was sort of the only boy in town, the only shot in town. And then when they had to compete with others, they kind of like, they didn't like that game.
You know, and I don't want to cast aspersions on Boeing and Lockheed. I'm sure they're very, very nice guys. But in my completely unfair and biased way of looking at this, they're kind of the Cobra Kai.
See, I would have put it now. I like the Cobra Kai analogy, but you guys
exist on this launch pad.
You guys,
Elon Musk around the gym in skeleton costumes.
You guys left out the P.T. Barnum of the bunch with Richard Branson and Virgin Galactic. And did I hear right that they're talking about making a hotel in space for a space orbiting space hotel?
That's Norm Bigelow, who's been talking about a space hotel for years. He's also a guy that put a bunch of money into paranormal research. So, but he's announced that, you know, because SpaceX looks like kind of the winner here, but it's too early to tell. And, you know, we want everybody to succeed because we want to have a space industry.
Right.
You had Paul Allen announced that he was going to be building a whole launch platform using the scaled composites, the people that make Branson's Virgin Galactic craft, and a SpaceX rocket. Yeah. They're going to marry the two.
Oh, my gosh. They're going to marry the two together? Okay, I'm going to jump back and do this. You know, if I was smart, what I would have done is I would have asked them to give me the sponsors for today's episode of Weird Things. For those of you who don't know, as of right now, you can still sponsor the Weird Things podcast for only $30, for only 30 bucks. You can hit us up at weirdthingspodcast@gmail.com, I believe. I'll get Andrew back on the line and we'll find out. But meanwhile, I want to hear from the chat room. I'll kick this over to you guys. Is anybody worried about privatization of space travel? Is there anyone out there that says, I saw a reference to Weyland-Yutani, of course, the company, the bad guys from the Aliens franchise. But so far, people are saying, no, never, no, effing do it, go for it. I am seeing one person over on the other chat room. So, one of the questions that I just asked Andrew was whether or not people have any reservations about privatizing space travel. If there's any, if anybody's worried about it, that it's going to lead to a Weyland-Yutani scenario where you're going to get the company that owns everything and be in control.
I think that, you know, whenever you go from something that's essentially a nationalized enterprise to privatization, is that there is this fear for some people that, when you live in a democracy that controls these national industries, that you lose control. And that is a fear. I don't hold to that. I don't think really any of us do. And we never had control to begin with. You know, it was up to a bunch of bureaucrats in NASA and some congressmen who, you know, wanted to have their names put on launch facilities and stuff to decide what got funded and what didn't. I look at it as it's the best of both worlds. You know, NASA's excited because a lot of the risk, now is being taken up upon private enterprise, which means that NASA can focus on doing the things that NASA does really well.
Right.
Let SpaceX and Blue Origin and these other companies focus on being the FedEx or the airlines or what have you.
Well, hey, you know, I'll tell you what, and I've gotten a bit of a reputation for bagging on Neil deGrasse Tyson on the site, but he had a very interesting comment on the CBS early show last Friday when the first launch was going to go up that, you know, the post office doesn't focus on building their own planes. You know,
right.
they buy a spot on, you know, cargo ships or cargo routes that go from here to there. And that's how a lot of our mail gets to us. So, you know, there's a great relationship that can be had where, you know, some companies, you know, the nationalized industry can do something that they do well while, you know, kind of outsourcing the things that historically they have not done great.
Right. So in that line, do you feel like there's no reason? In the chat room, somebody has pointed out that on 60 Minutes, Elon Musk looked visibly upset at the idea that some astronauts were against the privatization efforts.
Yeah, he was sad because you had your I think it was like Neil Armstrong and some others that, you know.
Hang on 1 second. We actually we heard everything up until Neil Armstrong. I don't know if you're moving from one tower to another. You want to try this again?
Can you still hear us?
Yeah, you're back now. Go ahead. You were saying Neil Armstrong?
I was probably reaching the bandwidth checking Justin TV. I think that there is a fear that NASA is giving something up. And it's kind of silly because you think about it. NASA didn't build the space shuttle. You know, that was Rockwell. That was a dozen companies that came together to build that. NASA contracted for a space shuttle. They said, well, this is the spec we want. And there's a lot of arguments to be made that, you know, like a committee designing a camel, trying to create a horse meets his camel. That's what the space shuttle was, where, you know, NASA is still going to be contracting. And I think for if you're a career astronaut, the idea that you're going to have to buy a ticket to get into space instead of hop on over to Canaveral in the space, you know, NASA owning their own craft, maybe that's unsettling to some.
Yeah, so Pretty Jumbles in the chat room says that she heard someone on NPR thinking she thinks it was a NASA employee saying that they feel like SpaceX is not taking it slow and cautious enough. And I guess my response to that is that's sort of a hallmark of what happens when you open stuff up to private enterprise. The very definition is people try to be first, and some people overstep their bounds, in which case they fail and they take colossal financial losses, and it allows prudent people to step in and learn from the imprudent people's mistakes. Now, I'm not saying that SpaceX is being imprudent, but even if they are, it seems like it's still a win for the scientific knowledge of everybody trying to get into space.
Yeah, you know, SpaceX up until now has spent their own money. It's been private capital. It hasn't cost the taxpayer a dime. Now there's a program that they're participating in with other companies that NASA says, okay, we'll spend a fraction of what we would have spent to do it ourselves to have somebody else go out there and do this. You know, if a bunch of billionaires want to pony their money together to build a better rocket, let's do it, and we're going to drive up there to go cheer them on.
Right.
You know, we don't know. We only have, you know, as far as space programs, you have a Russian program, you have a Chinese program, there's a European combined program, and then there's the United States. And, you know, really, you know, that's it. You know, there's and the Chinese is based off of the Russian hardware. And now we've got this new entry here that's the new power that's able to put something into orbit. And it's built in El Segundo, California. It's being launched from Cape Canaveral here. It's inspiring a whole new generation of people and engineers. If you want to launch rockets, you don't have to go work for NASA, and you don't have to work for a company that makes missiles to blow up people.
So Well, let me play devil's advocate here. Let me say, for somebody who might point out that all of those agencies, all of those institutions existed for scientific advancement and scientific achievement. What this opening up to the dark side of corporate interest, all of a sudden corporations decide, oh, it's only profitable to make these medicines in space, or it's not worth it to run these experiments. Could that be a bad thing? How would you respond to that?
Well, I would say, Mr. Devil's Advocate, I would say two out of those four, we have yet to see any of the scientific research they produced for it, because their space programs are run by their military, and their primary purpose has been the militarization of space. That would be my response, is that both the United States and Europe, we have civilian space agencies. China and Russia, those are not civilian space agencies. They are controlled and operated by the military, their military objectives. Any science is secondary. And other than the Russians have done some amazing things in figuring out how long people can endure in space, but Russian space science research is, you know, it is nowhere near what we've been able to accomplish, because it's purely been, you know, what, for the most part, theirs is the militarization of space, and in maybe an indirect way, but again, who runs it there? Generals.
One of the ideas that was just postulated in the chat room, again from Pretty Jumbles, was once there's a set dollar figure for what it takes to get stuff into space, all of a sudden it becomes possible to do Kickstarter projects for individual science experiments. Like, no matter how silly it is, you could do the space equivalent of the RoboCop statue in Detroit on Kickstarter.
Brian, we could do a Kickstarter program for creating our own satellite for our own, you know, global. Let's give people in Iran and Syria internet access.
Wow. Holy cow. Now that's brilliant. Wow.
I mean, that is like what you need to think about is this is a backbone. I mean, like, this is the foundation that kind of, you know, to quote Inception, the simple idea that changes everything. You know, you can, as soon as you just put a price tag on how much it costs to get things into orbit.
You know, 2 years ago, Planetary Resources came out and said, hey, we're looking at space mining. You'd be like, how are you going to get there? And now Planetary Resources comes out and says, hey, we want to do space mining, knowing that maybe it won't be SpaceX. Maybe it'll be Blue Origin. Maybe it'll be Armadillo. Maybe it'll be Sierra Nevada. Maybe it'll be United Launch. One of those people, a couple of them, will succeed, and they won't have to just hitch a ride on the space shuttle or, you know, whenever we're going to launch an Atlas booster. And that's when you have businesses, you know, it's like, think about the internet. Once you had a thing called the internet, we had the World Wide Web, and you understood what it was and what you could build on top of it. That's what space becomes now. You say, okay, for $20,000, I can put 20 kilos into orbit. You know, for, you know, $5 million, I can launch my own satellite cable company. I can, you know, launch my own weather satellites, my own telecommunications. I can start making my own, you know, space hotel. Forget tourism, though. I can start trying to go launch an asteroid. I can make my own, you know, telescope. I can do all of these things, and then we just start to progress from there.
Now, if you I don't want to. Obviously, we've been talking about the worst outcome of this being that the launch gets delayed again and you've wasted your time.
Outcome if we watch it blow up over the pad.
That would be horrifying. Yeah,
exactly. Well, and that's what I'm getting at is, if that does happen, what? I mean, on the one hand, that's a devastating blow, and it just is a big setback. Hopefully, there would be no loss of life. But what does that mean for you guys? Are you perversely glad that you were there, or is you just overwhelmed with anger at the fact, or frustration that it didn't work?
Well, Brian, here's first, number one, just again to classify, if this gets delayed for one reason or another, and you know,
that's more evidence of the system working. If it gets delayed, then that is how it is supposed to be.
It's like watching a sports team that you love tie a game. They went out, they played, they lived to play another day.
Correct.
You know, like, I'm excited that I got to see this in action. And, you know, yeah, it would have been cool to see him win, but, you know, it's really awesome that I was there for whatever I was there for. The reason why, even if it fails, let's say, worst possible scenario, it fails, we're looking at a much longer timeline than tonight. Well, we're looking at a much larger timeline than this week, than this month, than this year.
Right.
You know, this is, what Andrew said to me, the internet changed everything, and this is as big, if not bigger, than the internet. This is the most important thing that's happened in this history of the human species, is going multi-planet, and this is a massive step toward that, because we're not tourists. I mean, this is, you know, this is us kicking the tires on the moving van.
Yeah, but can't you almost hear in advance the headlines that you're going to hear tomorrow if this thing explodes on the launch pad? It's like, I'm mad even imagining it. I want to punch the news in the face.
I was mad at the Snark on Saturday.
SpaceX has another rocket, another Falcon, inside the assembly building right now. SpaceX understands, you know, the risk. They understand that it's a kind of thing. If you listen to them talk, they're extremely cautious. They're like, if it gets into orbit, if it gets into there, and it's hard. There's a reason why we talk about things not being, hey, it's not rocket science, because rocket science is hard. And you watch NASA's, you watch the first thing in NASA in the 50s and the 60s trying to get rockets into orbit.
Sure.
Explosion after explosion. The Russia, you know, Russia, they lost an entire city to an explosion on a launch pad.
Wait, why do I not know about this? What was the story there?
Oh, this was back in the...
Oh, nope. I guess we'll have to hold off before I find out what that story is. In true Weird Things fashion, now is a good moment for us to take a moment and thank the sponsors who make Weird Things possible. And had I been given the document with those sponsors, then I would be able to, right here from Mission Control, tell you the story about them. Hey, Andrew, I was just saying that what would have been smart is if I had the list of who sponsored today's episode of Weird Things, so every time we lost you, I could take a moment and thank them.
That is why we're not launching rockets.
Exactly.
They don't. You'll notice the colloquialism is not, hey, man, I ain't a Weird Things co-host.
Exactly. Yes. That's what I tweeted after the first Scrub launch on Twitter, that, you know, there's a reason why the colloquialism, like, oh, what are you, a Subway sandwich artist? Because, you know, like, things are easy to do. Other things are really, really hard. Rocket science is really, really hard. Doing this as in a really ham-fisted way is much easier to do.
Well, tell me about the city that vanished.
Okay, so basically the tradition in the Soviet space program was launch, then send out the press release. Because if something blew up or didn't succeed, they didn't want to be embarrassed because they're in a, you know, they're in a war of words with the United States.
Right.
So if you go look at, like, you know, there was like a city that appeared on Russian maps, like a little small city in the middle of nowhere, and then it stopped appearing on Russian maps, you know, and again, this was a period when you had the Iron Curtain and nobody could find out why, where did this, what happened, and then years later, researchers went in there and found out. And again, the problem is so many of these documents get destroyed and evidence is, you know, taken away. If you go look at photos of cosmonauts, you'll find out there's gaps where you see a lineup of these guys, where a number of these guys have been just airbrushed away. Okay? People who died and then they were erased from the official history. They never existed. And apparently what happened is they had one of these humongous Soviet rockets went to go take off, crashed on the pad, and just took out the facility and the area around it.
Yeah, I am looking at an article called the Nedelin Catastrophe. Is that the one you're talking about?
That might be it.
The article begins, this is from Encyclopedia Astronautica. The bodies that could be identified numbered several dozen, including that of the officer whose poor judgment has caused the disaster. They were shipped home. Families of the Soviet workers were alone in their grief. European journalists in Moscow soon picked up rumors that a gigantic rocket had exploded, quote, in Siberia, killing hundreds. But those stories quickly took their place amid other oft-embellished legends. Time passed. Other disasters occurred. Yeah, man, this is now all of a sudden I want to just know more about the disasters we never heard about.
A great guy to follow is James Oberg. He's done some fantastic research into that. He's friends with a lot of the Soviet cosmonauts. And, you know, and despite the fact that they're evil Ruskies, the cosmonauts themselves and the people in that program did do some amazing things. And despite the conditions and the people they worked for, they built some very stable hardware. They did some great accomplishments. And so, when you know, we belittle some of the things, it might be the military aspects of it, but there were a lot of heroic men and women, perhaps, in the Soviet Union who lost their lives in that race into space. And, you know, Yuri Gagarin is a hero to us all.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it's amazing how much of, and I suppose it was true for the United States as well, but how much of the PR wing of the space race was prevalent in the Soviet side of things. I remember going to space camp in the late 80s and getting a presentation. We had a astronaut who came in and talked about sleeping in space and showed video of her doing yo-yos in space or whatever. And then, like, the last 15 minutes of her presentation was all about how the Russians were going to beat us. And she showed, you know, the footage of pictures of the Russian version of the space shuttle that looked like strange. It had four rocket boosters instead of two. And it was terrifying to a kid. It's just like, we're going to lose space to the Reds out there.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, when we talk about, you know, what happens when you go from to privatization of space, we get away from the militarization of space, and having to use space exploration as a justification to have a military power or superiority. And you know, I you know, as a citizen of the freest country in the world and defender of the peace, I want us to have that superiority, but I don't want that to be the thing that drives our curiosity and our science and our ambition.
Okay, so I got a scenario for you. So what happens the first time, let's say it's 10 years in the future, and SpaceX and all of its brethren have been more successful than we ever imagined. We now have space flights going up every week like clockwork. People are going up. There's even a fledgling space hotel. And then somebody on their own dime sends up a rocket that, you know, some servo goes crazy and it crashes into, let's say, not the International Space Station, but some very large satellite, and essentially causes a space pileup, and now all of a sudden it's the equivalent of the Exxon Valdez of space debris. Where do we go from there? How does space privatized space travel recover from it? How would you go about cleaning up that kind of thing? And from a PR kind of thing, is that the end of privatized space travel?
Dude, you are thinking about this in a 2012 mindset. If we are to the point where we have built an element of our economy on privatized space travel, it's a thing. Like, that's like, it's like if we, you know, had another limb and then we broke it, like, we'd be like, oh my God, what are, is that the end of our third arm? Like, it would be a part of us, you know, it'd be something. If we're doing it and we're putting money into it and we're putting effort into it, then it's something worth saving. And that's really what
you don't think that there's going to be congressional hearings and they're going to drag people out and they're like, my baseball game was ruined because the ESPN satellite got knocked out. What are you going to tell my grandchildren? You need more oversight and regulation.
Well, right now, you know, we're tracking something like 20,000 different space objects, from, you know, lost lug wrenches to whatever out there. And as we start launching things into space, it makes it a lot easier to start catching these things. You can start building, you know, ion propulsion space, you know, garbage trucks that actually shift orbits and collect these things. And when you start to think about it in the scheme of things, when you can start putting stuff up into space, to build a space Roomba,
yeah,
is a pretty practical thing.
Yeah, there's I read some speculative articles of, I don't know, several years ago, talking about the possibility of creating giant foam, essentially space brooms. It'd be about the size of a few football fields large, and essentially its only job would be to be big and slow and have space debris collide with it until finally it collected enough space crap and then got heavy enough to fall back to Earth.
Yeah, but the funniest part is, like, as you were even saying that, and you're like, this is super successful, and we keep sending stuff to space, and, like, everything goes goes in the best possible way from where we are right now. It's like there's nothing you could say except for like, and then Space Hitler shows up. Like, that would have, makes it not like, yes, no, fine. Yes, we have an Exxon Valdez in space after we have set up a history of doing this. I'll exchange. I mean, you're going only things with value.
But let me to Brian's point, though. You know, you look at, we had the World Wide Web was, you know, 1992 or forget the 93.
Yeah, pretty much. 91. That was his big debut, yeah.
We survived 8 years of a Democrat administration, 8 years of a Republican administration, and 3 years of another Democratic administration. Every time we've had that, we've had senators and people who are like, you know, we need to really be able to control what's on there and be able to do that. And we don't know what kind of deals are made behind the scenes behind Google and all that. But, you know, when our current administration said we need to have a kill switch, that did not go over very well. And because we look at, for every bad thing that happens on the internet, 1,000 awesome things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hope that'll be, and there's going to be the move into space, the real space ages, which starts perhaps tonight, isn't something that, you know, is going to be immediate and linear and going to be perfect and flawless. It's a thing that's going to have setbacks. But what you want is, do we learn from what happens? Do we keep moving forward? And I'll tell you, a thing that makes me so excited about this, when you think about the futurism, the future is not something you can just wait for. The future is that people make happen. And if Elon Musk had not decided, looked into pricing what it would cost to build a greenhouse on Mars and being upset with how much it would cost, if he had decided to do this, and you had some other people like Jeff Bezos didn't want to decide what they wanted to do, and Elon Musk was clearly ahead of everybody else, our future in space, the moment that we set foot on another planet, could be 5 years, could be 10 years, could be 20 years away, could have been further out there if it hadn't been for one guy to say, why not now?
Well, now, I mean, you say one guy, but he's certainly the first, but he's not the only. I mean, we're just talking about all the competition that we have. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to take anything away from it. I think Elon Musk has some fundamental attitudes about space travel that nobody has had, whether they be in government or in private industry.
I watch Blue Origin with bated breath. I'm very excited and everything else. Only one guy's managed to put something into orbit.
Nope, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
And when in Blue Origin, what they're working on right now is a single stage to orbit rocket, a rocket that will take off, go into orbit, and land. And that is hugely ambitious, and that is exciting. And when, you know, they're going to go do their launch, if it's within my power, you know, we'll go there. We will go there. We will cheer them on with the same amount of enthusiasm that we're giving Elon Musk. Even the same for United Launch Alliance, the same for Sierra Nevada. If Armadillo Space, you know, can catch up, absolutely will get our full support and excitement for what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say this goes off without a hitch. So the launch happens. Next thing we hear about is how many days are we looking at until we hear about whether or not they were able to hit the same orbit? How many days do we hear about if they were able to get close and when they're scheduled to dock with the ISS?
I mean, we think it's 3 days. I would have to go look. I think it'd be like 3 days from today would be that they would then go try to dock or go into orbit, you know, come do their approach, their first approach to the ISS.
So, and what happens after that? Now, this is in speculative range. I'm sorry, say that again, Justin. I couldn't hear that.
Because when it was Saturday, it was going to launch, they were going to rendezvous with the ISS on Tuesday. So I think it was 3 days.
Okay, so let's say the whole mission is a success and everyone's high-fiving themselves. Does this accelerate the schedule for SpaceX? I mean, obviously, it doesn't impede it the way a disaster would.
What happens is they've got a launch manifest of other future missions they want to do, future service missions to the International Space Station. So if they do this and they get it and they look at the data and everything looks optimal, they have, like I said, they have another rocket on the pad or in the assembly room ready to go after this one. If this happens, you know, the Elon Musk has a time frame, and he realizes that your time frame, no matter how conservative you think you are, you're always going to be too optimistic because of those unforeseen circumstances. But if this succeeds, a few months later, they will do another launch. We'll get another launch this summer.
And so, I guess beyond that, we can only speculate what their long-term speed will be, and especially as they want to have initiatives like being able to salvage all three. Now, how far off are they from being able to retrieve all three stages of the rocket to have it land safely back at the launch pad?
Musk is they plan on simultaneously testing that, and he says, you know, I think the estimate I heard was maybe, you know, be able to actually test it maybe 6 years to a decade.
I can wait a decade.
You know, for something that I didn't, you know, that none of us even thought was possible 6 months ago.
Yeah, sure. Well, and so
what's exciting is in 6 years to a decade, who knows what we think now is impossible will be possible.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, it's inspirational. I mean, there's something I wish I could even put into words for people who don't get space or don't get the enthusiasm for the space race the way we do. It definitely feels magical, and I wish part of me wants to stay up all the way until 4 a.m. to watch this thing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, we're driving up now, and then hopefully on this podcast. I mean, this podcast is going to come out this week no matter what, but we'll be able to, you know, have a successful launch, and then, you know, we'll, you know, record and live stream. I'll be on my Justin TV channel. Awesome. We have some 5-hour energy, which is good. Good news. I'll be flying on the breeze by the time we come back.
This
is a moment. I mean, we really do hope that, you know, by the end of this podcast that people are listening to.
Nope, there we go. Hold on. I don't know if we've lost them. Yeah, they're switching between towers right now. Maybe now's a good time for us to sort of set up the last phase here. I don't know if we're going to have time to do picks. Normally we talk about our favorite science fiction, television, radio, movies, TV. Hey, do you guys... now that I got you back, do you guys want to do picks? Since this is kind of a weird episode of Scams of Weird Things,
let's go ahead and do picks.
Do you got one?
Sure, I got a pick. Yeah, I got a pick. It's topical not to what happened today or what we're going to go see today, but topical to the events of Friday and today. I went back and I watched The Social Network again on DVD.
Sure.
In light of the Facebook IPO, and I actually put some commentary on Google about why I didn't invest in the IPO, and it basically comes down to every time I think of Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook IPO, I can't get the image of the Joker from Dark Knight sitting on top of a pile of cash and setting it on fire to see what would happen. So,
well, and specifically, you gave some rationale for that. It wasn't just like, oh, I don't get the internet, and... I mean, you had good reasons for it.
Yeah, and I have a ton of respect for Zuckerberg, and I think Facebook's an amazing social changing phenomenon, absolutely. And I think that it's also a sign of watch The Social Network and realize that part of the reason the Facebook IPO didn't do as well as people thought is I think that a lot of the hardcore Facebook, it's a younger generation who aren't as IPO hungry and aren't as money centric as just people a few years older than them. I think they have a very different value system. They have values, not to say they're a bunch of hippie communists, but I think they have a different value system that a lot of people are adjusted to. And I've talked to this before about two friends who employ younger people who say that it's hard to motivate them with money because if they have their cell phone and they have their Facebook and they have their friends, they're pretty happy. Money, you know, can grant them a degree of things they can go do, but younger people seem to be nowhere near as motivated by money as other generations were. And I think that we've seen that in sort of, you know, the faith, you know, Zuckerberg never eager to create an IPO, was hesitant to even do advertising. And I think that's one of the things The Social Network really got right about Zuckerberg, is he is a guy that wanted to create this thing. And once he had this thing, that was all consuming.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what. I actually have spent my entire last week doing nothing but consuming two things, the video game Diablo and the television show Sons of Anarchy, and doing them both at the same time. Sons of Anarchy, I watched at first just because everyone told me it was good or it got really good. And I found it kind of like, all right, I get it. They're bad guys, and you don't know whether you should root for the good guys or the bad guys, and it puts you in interesting moral dilemmas. But the more the show went on, the more it had elements that really brought back my all-time favorite show, The Shield. The Shield is phenomenal. If you haven't watched The Shield, it, from episode one, punches you right between the legs, and it never lets go. The moral conundrums get deeper and deeper and more intricate, and the lies build on each other as you watch somebody squirm who is damned from the beginning, this character. But the difference is Sons of Anarchy seasons 1, 2, and 3 are all available on Netflix instant streaming right now. And I noticed that iTunes is doing something interesting where I started off buying Sons of Anarchy in HD for $2.99 a piece. And around like, because it's like it says buy the whole season for $34. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to commit $34. But buying them piecemeal one at a time for $2.99 each, after around the fifth or sixth one, I noticed that it was applying how much I had spent for the individual episodes against the season. So now all of a sudden, you're about 8 episodes in. It's like, hey, bro, just $14 for the rest of the season. Just go for it. So I did, and I'm glad I did. The fourth season of Sons of Anarchy justifies the time and investment in the first three. I really enjoyed it. You guys should jump into it.
Yeah, I watched season one and almost finished season two of Sons of Anarchy, and I absolutely thoroughly loved it. I thought it was a delight. A really neat show. I thought it was just a really kind of a fresh way, you know, perspective on something. I enjoyed it very much. Enjoyed it, absolutely.
So when we lost you there for a second, I was comparing it to how much I loved The Shield. Did you ever watch The Shield? Dude, the Shield is, if you liked Sons of Anarchy, you will love The Shield. Shield's amazing. But I don't think it's on instant streaming, which is the difference. What about you, Justin?
Well, we talked a lot about rocket technology in this episode, and obviously this is a very exciting time in our lives. I think in large part because there's going to come a point where we're likely going to have to put the Hulk into orbit because he's a danger to our Earth, which is the plot of a Planet Hulk. I think it's a comic book. I read it in the graphic novel form, but me and Andrew have talked a lot about how difficult doing a Hulk story is, and he obviously is a very popular character now because in the Avengers he was a very, very likable character, and he seems to shine in other people's stories. But this is, I think, a great example of a awesome standalone Hulk story. It obviously pays a lot of homage to Conan and Gladiator and stuff like
John
that.
John Carter Moore.
Yeah, I was about to say John Carter, sure.
But it is this awesome sort of fusion of those sort of classic ideas with high adventure space stuff and the elements of the Hulk, the character that we love the most. So it also feeds into the, I think, much hyped, not exactly well executed World War Hulk, which I know people really, really dig. But I really loved it. Planet Hulk, you can get it on Amazon as the graphic novel. But if the Avengers left you jonesing for Mo Hulk, then and you're really psyched about space, then that would be a good way to kind of wet your whistle.
So before we wrap up, let me ask you guys, did you guys see the news on the Leap, the motion control system? A lot of people blogging about it. It was on Engadget and Gizmodo, the unofficial Apple weblog.
Yeah, I think up last night on Twitter about that. I think it's the Leap is amazing. I think that, you know, hats off to Microsoft for being the first to the market with just a hand, you know, device-free interactivity. And to see what with the Leap, going on the Leap, my God, I mean, that's just, when did they do the display just showing the fingers? Looks awesome.
Yeah, no, extraordinarily precise. And I think that's the biggest gripe that we have, even with the Kinect. The Kinect is a definite leap forward in motion control technology. But if you see, just go to Google and look up leap demonstration video, gesture-based computing, that kind of thing. It's unreal. Like, we're all going to be waving our hands around like idiots in front of our computers for decades to come.
Dude, look at the Avengers. Like, there's a scene. I mean, I've now seen the Avengers three times. Oh, real quick, let me just say this. So I took my five-year-old little brother, who has never seen any of the previous Avengers movies, has very little, except for maybe a cartoon here or there, exposure to the Marvel characters. I took him out of his kindergarten class, a la, if anybody's listened to Night Attack, me and Brian's comedy album, the story, the track on their Uncle Bilbo, although I was not high like my uncle was. We did not go to laser tag. We went to go see the Avengers. But seeing that movie again for the third time, you have all the computer systems, especially in Stark Industries, it's just all gesture-based. It's all just like holding your hand in front of it and moving stuff over. And watching the leap stuff, it's like, it's here.
Yeah.
But now that looked like, oh, look, like there's a tablet computer and, you know, Tony just kind of, you know, throws all the windows up to big display monitors. And now it's like Leap plus AirPlay. That's real. That's like a real thing that you could do. That's like 2 years away. That's 6 months away.
Yeah, man. Think about how already antiquated the very nature of minority, you know, we all call it the Minority Report style gesture based motion control, but meanwhile, it's even Minority Report would look stupid because he had to put on a gizmo in order to control all that stuff.
I wrote a whole thing on Weird Things about how stupid that was when it came out. You know,
you have no idea. Andrew's literally been bitching about this since Minority Report. Like, not joking around. This has been a pet peeve for Andrew since that trailer came out. Not even the movie, the trailer.
I was like, I'm watching. It's like, this is a movie about the future. Why are they using stuff from MIT Media Lab from 20 years ago?
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was just like, you know, it's like, we have better stuff now. Why are they showing the light? And I get, you know, visually a light glove. And I'm like, but it's like, ah. And
so apparently you have noticed that.
Yes. Yeah, no. You have not.
Funny you should mention that.
This has been, I am not even kidding you. We are coming up on like the decade anniversary.
That is awesome.
I get into my whole pet peeve about the future. Movies, and how movies show the future. And, you know, every movie about the future is generally The Fugitive.
Sure.
But anyhow, I digress. Hey, Hampton Fancher, by the way, is going to be writing a script to a sequel to his most famous movie ever.
What movie is that?
A little movie called Blade Runner.
What?
Ridley Scott's doing Blade Runner 2. Hampton Fancher, who wrote the original screenplay, is writing the new screenplay for the new Blade Runner movie.
Wait, and so they worked that out with the Dick Estate? Yeah, I guess. Just, we'll see.
So, Prometheus, and then the idea of Ridley Scott hopping into a new Blade Runner movie, it's a good time to be a geek.
It's a good time to be a geek who remembers Ridley Scott movies from the 80s and the 70s, because he's certainly going back to what made him a success.
Yep.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's such a brilliant time. You know, now, as the Avengers tracks as well as it has. I mean, we've yet to come. Like, now, what was going to be the 800-pound gorilla of this summer is now, you know, Dark Knight Rises is now like, well, you know, I hope Dark Knight Rises is good and makes money. You know, it's such an amazing time to have paid attention to all these characters and to have a base and a love for these kind of adventures and heroes and stories. And it was so awesome taking my little brother to go see Avengers and then leaving the theater. He's an Iron Man fan of all of them. He was talking about how much he loved Iron Man. And then I saw him 2 days later, and he's like, yeah, my favorite's Iron Man. My second favorite is Captain America. My third favorite is Hulk. And he just has a list and a rationale for all of his favorite characters. And just to see kind of those seeds sort of take root, and all those ideas that I remember just warping my brain as a kid and just making me obsessed with those adventures and concepts is just, it's so amazing.
See, on the flip side, I'm still trying to sell my 8-year-old daughter on seeing the Avengers by letting her see, unfortunately, only Iron Man 2 is on Netflix. I couldn't show her the first one. So Iron Man 2, I had to sort of explain who Tony Stark was and what the Iron Man armor is. And meanwhile, I hit play. Do you realize that there's not a fight scene or anything of interest at all in that movie for 30 minutes in? It's all just people talking, and I have to explain to Penelope, and she's like, why does he ever take the armor off? How come he never has the armor on? That's stupid. He should just wear the armor all the time.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of structural problems with Iron Man 2, but, you know, I'll tell you what, it was really interesting to me, you know, just have somebody going cold to the Avengers, you know, and that's a movie where he got a little especially through the first third of that movie, he got a little antsy as there's just a lot of talky talk and not a lot of
sure.
Mention. But as soon as it got into, you know, the Battle of Manhattan, he was locked and loaded.
That's awesome. Well, I guess we should wrap up this episode of Weird Things. Now, by the time everyone hears this, we'll already know how it went. Should we plan on having a little get-together, a little denouement for this episode?
Well, I'll tell you what. If everything goes according to Hoyle and this thing launches, I mean, I know we'll be live streaming on my Justin TV tonight. Andrew, I mean, we'll have two iPhones. So we'll record what's going on, and hopefully in the next couple seconds on this episode, you will hear the rocket going up and me and Andrew being very excited about it, and at least the sounds of people watching history be made.
God, it's amazing. I'm disappointed.
Psych!
Yeah, exactly. I'm disappointed that we didn't have as much argument as we did last week, but I suppose that's all right. We can all be on the same page that we're excited about this.
This is a cool Kumbaya episode. You know, we got a little, I mean, this is, all right, here's the thing. We got a lot of listeners to the last episode, and I'm very happy that people gave us a chance. And if there's one thing that, yeah, we didn't, but this podcast isn't about us yelling. It's about us just getting massive boners for this kind of stuff. whether those mean that we clash and we yell about it, then that's one side of the coin. And then the other side of the coin is that we're all just super pumped and we want to talk about the future.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, you want to take us out?
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Weird Things podcast. It's been weird.
Yes, I'm getting scared.
Stage 1 and stage 2 tanks are pressing to their flight pressures.
See, we're getting the feed behind the time. It's taking off right now.
Wow. Holy smokes. Look at it. That is beautiful. Now we're going to get the sound.
Fire axe is on.
T-minus 15
seconds. Isn't that beautiful? Look at that.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Falcon 9.
What you are seeing, folks, is Falcon not the sun. That is the Falcon 9 going
look at that.
Goddamn
look at that.
Space.
The sound is now hitting us.
Listen to that, folks.
Look at that.
Starting gravity turn. First stage.
Dude, I'm just so you see the bay. It's just reflecting.
It's like just, yeah, it's like morning here as far as how bright it is. It is beautiful. Look at that. Look at that. It's like a new, it's like a sun.
Dude. It's man conquering. It's amazing.
First stage propellant stabilization is active.
The beautiful thing about a night launch is you get to see it launch for longer.
Vehicle's on a nominal trajectory.
Everything's good so far.
Dude, you guys, what isn't really picking up on the live stream is the ribbon that it's going to leave behind it.
Oh, wow. Look at that. And you just... It's getting louder. It's going supersonic. You can feel it. It's just rumbling louder.
Wow.
But you
yeah,
can
no,
hear
there,
that.
There's a vibrating... And you can feel it almost in your chest.
The vehicle has reached maximum aerodynamic pressure.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Oh, wow.
And there we go. And now it just gets tinier and tinier, like it's the star in the sky.
Sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.
He's called the Warlock. Wherever he goes, dark miracles follow. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave. An angel falls to her death in front of thousands of witnesses. Some people think he's a god. Others think he's the devil. To Jessica Blackwood, he's a killer. She'll have to see through his deception and stop a man others are dying to believe. Andrew Main's new thriller, Angel Killer. It's available now in the Amazon Kindle store for only 99 cents.